Welcome to the Tech Policy Podcast. I'm Evan Schwartztrauber, your host. On today's show, Uber surge and price fixing. Is Uber conspiring to fix ride-sharing prices? Is its infamous surge pricing a basic market mechanism and a reflection of, you know, supply and demand, economics 101? Or is this an illegal pricing scheme? Joining me to discuss this is Jared Meyer, a research fellow at the Manhattan Institute and author of Uber Positive, Why Americans Love the Sharing Economy. Jared, thank you for joining me.
Hey, thanks for having me, Evan.
So, Jared, this is now your fifth appearance on the podcast, and would you say that you have better engagement with this audience, or you reach more eyeballs and ears than on Fox News?
I think it's getting close. I mean, if we looked at quality and how much they dive into the issues, Tech Policy Podcast definitely has Fox News beat.
And do you think that the Fox News audience is more Uber savvy than Tech Policy Podcast audience?
I would hope not.
Well, let's get into it. So Uber is being accused, or specifically CEO Travis Kalanick.
Kalanick.
All right, yeah. Well, whatever.
You're like the people who call de Blasio.
I would never, because the mayor of my city eats his pizza with a fork and a knife. So, but we'll do that for another episode. But Travis Kalanick, CEO of Uber, he's being accused of conspiring to fix prices, against monopoly regulations and all sorts of stuff. So, give us the basics of the lawsuit and what's going on here.
Well, pretty much Spencer Meyer, my long-lost brother, where actually there's no relation, but he filed a lawsuit against Kalanick and all the other Uber drivers saying that they were conspiring, this massive secretive conspiracy to fix prices for customers, and specifically when it comes to surge, when the rates are higher in times of high demand and low supply, that they're using this to gouge customers and that pretty much Uber needs to stop its horizontal agreement that it has with drivers, where they set a standard price that drivers can either choose to accept or not accept by not driving.
So because Uber drivers are independent contractors, and Uber has made that argument many times to push back against people who say that they need to provide a full package of benefits to their drivers and call them employees, it seems like this argument's now being turned against them. And Spencer Meyer, no relation to you, is saying that because they are independent contractors and because theoretically an independent driver should be able to set his own rates or something like that, that them all agreeing to Uber's platform requirements, which says what a ride costs, what the formula is, even though Uber drivers are independent contractors, they all have to accept that this platform is neutral and that it has certain parameters of what a ride could cost, that action makes them part of a conspiracy?
Yes, a conspiracy to fix prices. And without diving too much into the legal reasoning here, if you had a horizontal agreement to fix prices, let's say all steel producers deciding to sell steel for the same price, that's per se illegal, which means, you know, on its face, it's just illegal. It's against the Antitrust Act, and you can't do it in the United States. But what's really interesting is since the late 1970s, the Supreme Court, when it comes to new business models, they haven't been applying the strict per se reasoning. What they want to do is look at the effects of the pricing scheme and how it's working with new business models. So Uber clearly falls into a new innovative business model. So it really matters what the effects of having a surge pricing or a central priced mechanism leads to for consumers and competition in this case.
So the distinction is that a per se ban, that's just outright ban, prescriptive. It doesn't matter what the effects on the consumer are. What you're suggesting is that now courts are more interested in a case-by-case analysis to see if there's actual consumer harm. But Spencer Meyer, that's not what he's looking for. He's looking for just a blanket ban on this practice, right?
That's correct. And what's really surprising is that he is an Uber driver himself. And what they're trying to do is establish a national class action class, where then all Uber riders who ended up paying surge pricing would get refunded either whole or part of their money, you know, after accounting for lawyer fees and all of that.
So as dear leader of Tech Freedom, Baron Soka, said in our pre-show prep, how in the world would this be good for drivers? The plaintiff is a driver. How is this possibly good for drivers if the rewards, assuming that they win and Uber has to pay out, they all go to riders? I mean, it seems like drivers are actually being targeted in this lawsuit and being accused of being part of a conspiracy, but it's weird that he's kind of screwing over his fellow drivers.
There's a lot that's weird about this lawsuit. And first of all, I should point out, even though Judge Rakoff allowed the suit to move forward, he decided not to dismiss it on preliminary grounds. That just means it met the barest, lowest bone standard of plausible. This doesn't mean that they have a shut door case against Uber or that Uber is even guilty of anything. What it means is that it can move forward. So what I imagine right now is Uber is going to file a motion for summary judgment, and then the judge will decide, hey, this is a stupid claim. It really makes no sense. And there's about three other things that just go beyond reason when we're talking about this case. Most of all, when they were defining the market to say that Uber had a monopoly and that it could control prices by deciding what its drivers pay or what its drivers are paid, it was looking at, for example, if we see New York City, Uber accounts for less than 2% of transportation options. If we add in taxis, Lyft, buses, subways, and even exclude private car ownership and walking. So if you have 2% of an already narrow market where, again, we're excluding walking and taking your private car, that's by no means a monopoly. And good luck trying to manipulate prices when you only have 2% of a total market.
As a native of New York City, I can say that excluding walking, biking, and private car ownership from an analysis of the transportation market is quite generous. So for you to arrive at 2% after those exclusions is pretty remarkable. And to say that that's a monopoly is kind of crazy. And the only way that you can say that's a monopoly is if you completely exclude everything and just say that ride sharing is a separate market from the rest of transportation. Uber and Lyft are the only competitors. And because Uber has an overwhelming market share in New York compared to Lyft, that's somehow a monopoly. But that's just crazy. Of course they should take into account the New York City subway, the buses, biking, City Bike, the bike share, those are all competitors. I mean, if getting to and from a place is the market, any way that you do that should be viewed as a competitor in a market analysis, no?
Exactly. And also, even if we were just looking at ride sharing, I mean, Uber beats Lyft by quite a lot in New York City, but there's a lot of Midwest cities I've been to where there's more Lyft drivers than there are Uber drivers. And this highlights another important point. Drivers hop back and forth between the platforms. Surprisingly, when we got some data on Lyft drivers during a separate court case the company was going through, we found out that over 40% of Lyft drivers are driving for Uber at the same time, that they have both apps open and they decide which one to take. So it's the idea that this is some vast conspiracy, first of all, is laughable. Sorry to all you conspiracy theorists out there. Also, chemtrails aren't a real thing. But beyond that, it shows you that they're defining the market too narrowly, and drivers are using this as a service where they can decide to sign up with it or not, or to choose to do something else. And it, far from being a monopoly or a price-fixing agreement, I think we need to look at the benefits of surge pricing, which is appropriate in this case in new technology, to then see that this case is insane.
So we're going to shift gears in a moment, so to speak, to the benefits of surge and the controversy around that practice. But just to wrap up the lawsuit, what are the next steps here? As you said, the judge made the very low bar analysis that this is somehow at least plausible. So that way it gets to go forward, even though signs point to this lawsuit not really going anywhere. But are there any major dates coming up? What's next?
We don't have any dates yet that I've heard of, but it does seem like what Uber is going to try to do is just dismiss this case on its merits once they actually bring up the real merits of the case. And then afterwards, if they decide not to do that, I guess it will go to a jury and people will have to decide. But if I was Uber, I would not be very worried about this. And if I was Lyft, I would also not worry that they're going to come after, you know, me with the same lawsuit.
So let's get to surge pricing, because really that's probably at the core of this lawsuit, is just an objection to the practice itself, whether or not it's a antitrust violation. And we might have a follow-up episode about kind of the antitrust issues and the legal issues. But let's talk about surge, because it is controversial, and for a couple of reasons. Everyone saw the stories after New Year's of drunk people who took, $300 rides home, and now they're complaining that they can't afford it, even though I've used Uber. When the surge is relatively high, you have to type in the multiplier. Let's say it's 2.5 times the normal rate. You have to type it in, and that's the way of saying, how drunk are you? Are you able to actually understand what you're going to be charged here? So there really is no excuse here. If you pay $300 for a ride, you screwed up. But anyway, the practice is also controversial because of disasters and emergencies. And there was one story, I believe, in Australia where there was a shooting, and Uber surge went up because demand skyrocketed, and people were saying, oh, that's heartless, you know, we're in the middle of a crisis. So while on the whole, we'll talk about the practice, but probably being fine, but there are these little pockets of controversy that, you know, news articles love to pick up and really blow out of proportion. But let's talk about surge. It's counterintuitive. It's charging more to the customer. It's going to make your ride more expensive, but you say that it's good for both the rider and the driver. How so?
Well, first of all, people need to understand that what surge is doing is allowing people to always get an Uber or Prime Time, in the case of Lyft, when they want one. So, for example, if I'm trying to get home from the bars at 3 a.m. along with everyone else who's out that night, I want a reliable transportation method home. I don't want to stand on the side of the road trying to flag down a taxi. I mean, in D.C., the metro's closed by that time. I don't want to wait 40 minutes for a train in New York at that time. So I should be willing to pay more to get home then. The only problem, though, is that drivers, I mean, I know for me personally, I would rather be sleeping than working at 3 a.m. So for some way to incentivize drivers to get out on the road, you need to increase their earnings. So in times of high demand, drivers can earn more. This clearly benefits them. As I'm sure you've noticed talking to Uber drivers, it's one of the main things they talk about. They decide when they're going to drive based on the expectation that it will be surging. And then they know what specific areas to go to based on kind of a heat map that the companies provide them with, where the most demand is. But on the side of riders, again, what I really value is a way to get home. If you just want a cheap method home, there are plenty of other options. You can go back to the traditional taxi system and see how well that worked out for you. But if you want a reliable method, which again, Uber wanted to be everyone's private driver, that means the driver will come when you want it, you need to accept surge pricing.
There's some controversy around how they calculate these rates, whether they go down quick enough. I know that the app has a notification feature where you can say, notify me when the surge ends. When I'm not in a rush, I do that. And of course, there are always differences in customers. Some customers, like yourself, if you're at the bar, it's cold, you don't want to be standing on the street, you want to pay that extra. But let's say I'm still inside paying my bill, not really in a rush, I can say, notify me when the surge ends. But is there any legitimacy to consumer complaints about surging and people questioning the algorithm? Just in your experience, is this all just nonsense, or is there a real reason to be scrutinizing the way that Uber does surge?
I think there's a reason for consumers to try to look at how Uber is calculating their surge pricing, because I've noticed from what I've seen is that I think they do it on a little bit too small of a basis geographically. So one area will be surging, then you just walk, you know, a few blocks over and now it's not surging, and they go away too quickly. I think to make it better, they could make them last a little bit longer and also in a little wider area. But again, if I really disagreed with that, I just have little quibbles with it. Just don't take Uber, don't pay surge, and don't go on your phone and type in that number. I mean, I remember one time I was trying to get back from Manhattan to where I lived in Queens a few years ago. It was pretty late at night. My friends and I were all out drinking, and I just remember, I'm like, why does this stupid thing keep popping up on my screen? I just want my Uber to come. And it was like, are you really sure you want to pay five times what you usually do? It's like, seriously, are you sure you want to do this? So when I woke up with a $170 Uber bill the next day, I had no one to blame but myself.
Well, taking responsibility, that's the free market way, right? But yeah, just another anecdote that I have that really demonstrates the importance of surge and how drivers benefit from it. I went to Baltimore on President's Day, and it was pretty snowy and rainy, not a great day. So when we arrived in Baltimore off of the train, we took an Uber to get to the restaurant that we were going to, and it was surging, but there was a few of us, and we split it, not a big deal. And we were talking to the driver, and he was saying that Uber had recently lowered prices in Baltimore across the board because of a lower demand. So they say that Uber says that in the winter, people take fewer rides. I mean, for me, that's kind of weird because I take more Ubers when it's cold. But anyway, that's what the data show. And that the drivers, as a natural response to the lower prices, decided only to drive during surge. So the drivers, through a market mechanism, kind of corrected for the price decrease. Then I went back to Baltimore 2 months later, got the same exact Uber driver, which is crazy coincidence, and he remembered me. And I asked him, and he said they undid the price decrease. So that there was a really cool way of the drivers expressing dissatisfaction at the price decrease through their own choice of choosing when to drive, and then Uber, realizing that they made a mistake with the price decrease in Baltimore, they went too far, raised it back up so that people were now willing to drive when there wasn't any surge. So there's a perfect example of something that was beneficial for us as the riders, because we were able to get an Uber pretty quickly on a crap night with hail and snow and everything, and a benefit for the drivers who were able to get a company to change its behavior just through their own behavior.
Yeah, and I think one of the problems we see, I mean, you would think that when people hear the story you just told, or any one of when people were able to get a ride home, which has greatly affected the incidence of drunk driving in areas where Uber exists. But I would say one of the reasons people are still against it is just their general hatred of the idea of price gouging, where they say that's not fair. And economists have actually ran experiments on this, on dynamic pricing, where the prices change, and they found anything over 3 times the normal price, even people who understand how it works still view it as kind of not fair. So maybe Uber could look into capping its surge, which I know Lyft did for a while. I'm not sure if they're still doing it with their prime time pricing, capping it at some level. But again, even if we do that, good luck getting a ride home after the ball drops on New Year's if it's capped at 3 times.
Right, and there are always other options. I mean, maybe this is the perfect example of why there will still be a market for a hail taxi with a flat rate that is connected to the government and unions and, you know, people who are worried that Uber and Lyft will completely destroy the taxi industry. Maybe this is a reason why it won't, because if the surge goes up, it has to be pretty high in DC for an Uber to be more expensive than a DC taxi, but there's your option. There's a fixed price. It doesn't matter how busy it is, doesn't matter how crowded it is at the bar. If you're willing to stand out there with your hand up in the street and wait, you will get a flat rate.
Yeah, and that's simply what people don't understand, but playing into it more, I mean, this lawsuit, we can just see that what they're trying to do, and why I found a lot of people in the media were writing about this, and all they talked about was just how terrible surge is. Well, they didn't realize what the lawsuit's actually alleging and how ridiculous its argument is, again, especially on the market side. So hopefully as the trial moves forward, or if it does move forward, we can get some more clarity on what this actually means and how, frankly, irrational this current case is. It's called Meyer v. Kalanick.
Right. Well, we'll certainly be keeping tabs on the lawsuit, and if there are any major updates to share other than just a complete dismissal, which would not be much of a news item, we'll be sure to bring that back up on the podcast. But that's it for today's show. My guest has been Jared Meyer, a research fellow at the Manhattan Institute and author of Uber Positive, Why Americans Love the Sharing Economy. Check that out on Amazon. And we'll also link to an article he wrote with another former guest of the show, Randall Meyer. Again, no relation. We've got 3 Meyers at play right now, so a little bit of confusion, but bear with us. And they've got an article in Reason Magazine laying out the lawsuit, getting a little bit more into detail about the antitrust issues that are at play. So we'll link to that in the show notes as well.
Yeah, he's a lawyer, so he was the one who took care of all the legal arguments.
You've done pretty well for yourself here without a law degree. But thank you for joining me, Jared, for now the 5th time.
Well, thanks, Evan.
Follow us on Twitter at TechFreedom or on Facebook.com/TechFreedom. Find this podcast in the iTunes store or on your favorite podcast app. If you like what you hear, please leave us a review. It'll help us and help others find the show. Thank you for listening.
The Tech Policy Podcast is produced and distributed by Tech Freedom, a nonpartisan, nonprofit think tank in Washington, D.C. To learn more about our work, make a tax-deductible donation, or find other episodes, find us online at techfreedom.org.